to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Hi everyone, Tessa here, and welcome to an episode of the Radio Life Sciences Podcast. When doing research, you sometimes want to use scientific instrumentation, such as tools or hardware, that do not exist in the exact way you want to use them. Or you've come up with a great design, but you are looking for that next step towards a physical proof of concept. However, you want to customize your research, prototyping labs and makerspaces are there to help you out. And we're here today to talk to researchers, students and teachers to find out all possibilities Utrecht University's prototyping lab has to offer. So let's welcome Edward Patton and Josh Hauser.
Hi.
Hi. Can you introduce yourselves?
Hi. So I'm Edward Patton. I'm a teacher here at Utrecht University, and I work for the Bio-Inspired Innovation Department. But here in the Proto Lab, I'm also one of the coordinators. So my role here in the lab is to basically couple the lab with other departments or facilities in order to basically allow the most people to use the lab and get the best benefit out of it, essentially.
I'm Josh Hauser. I'm a second-year Bio-Inspired Innovation Master's student, and I'm also a student assistant with the Physics Department.
Okay, cool. So we're here at a special location. We're normally recording in an ordinary room, but this is the makerspace, the prototyping lab, the Lilly's prototyping lab. And when I look around, I see all kinds of hardware, tools, saws, machines. Can you tell me a bit about what I'm seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. So just looking around the room, what's interesting? So in the room just next to us, through the glass panels, we can see basically all of our 3D printers. We have a bunch of different 3D printers that can print stuff like PLA.
What's that?
PLA, polylactic acid. It's just one of the plastic filaments we use, sorry. We basically have a bunch of 3D printers. Maybe the details are a bit too much. And then we also have loads of tools that you can do electronics works with. So if you want to program or solder an Arduino, for instance, a little microcontroller, then we have the facilities to do that. We also have things like a heat transfer press, which enables you to transfer like colors or pictures from one material onto another, which basically I like to call it the T-shirt printing machine, because that's what people mostly seem to do with it. And then we just have a whole variety of other tools and just general hardware equipment that would allow you to basically work on any project that you'd want. We also have a 3D scanner, so it can use light to scan, make a digital version of something that exists by basically shining bright light at it.
So any object you can put in and it gets scanned magically into version.
Yeah.
Through technology.
Yeah, through magical technology. It's actually, it has a bit of trouble with things that are see-through because it uses light. So okay. If it's see-through, light goes through it and doesn't bounce back towards the sensor.
Yeah.
It also has trouble with things that are really, really dark because that absorbs the light, so it doesn't go back. But essentially, for lots of surfaces, it can create a very accurate, down to quarter of a millimeter scale replica of something digitally that exists physically.
Nice. So we've been here for a few minutes now, and people are coming in and out just to ask you for advice or to use tools. Can you tell me, you spend both your time, major amounts of your time in this place. What does a typical day here look like?
I would say there is no typical day here. It depends on whether there are classes going on, whether there are workshops. Honestly, just demand. Sometimes there's periods of time where there are lots of projects. Sometimes there aren't. You know, you have times like last summer where Ed and I were the only people in here for two months. And it was very, very quiet. And then there are days like last week, I think there were probably, I think maybe every day last week, there were 40 people in here at every hour of the day, because it was the last week for the game design students to finish their projects.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for people that can see the video recording, you might get a sense of what 40 people in this space would look like, because it's not a particularly large space. But yeah, I agree with Josh. It does vary a lot. We do tend to see patterns, like, for instance, randomly Tuesdays and Thursdays are way busier, and then Mondays are super quiet. But I would say a typical day in the Proto Lab, if I was to kind of create this ideal version, would be in the morning. we'd maybe have a course or a workshop running. So we'd be like teaching people some skill, either that or people with projects that had appointments that wanted to learn a specific skill. So maybe you want to learn, I know how to use a 3D scanner. They would be here in the morning. And then as it gets to the afternoon, we have our, I guess what you'd call our walk-in hours. Mm-hmm. So from 1 until 5, basically anyone can come and work on any project. Well, so long as it's to do with research or education. And so long as we've accepted their project, and then pretty much anyone can just come in here and work on it with us kind of mentoring them or us kind of working in the background. And then if they need some help, we're there to offer it.
That's really cool. Josh, you're as a student, what did you use the Proto Lab for yourself?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time in here working on my major research project. So I was tasked with building a field warming setup in collaboration with the Plant Stress Resilience Lab, and it's currently installed in the Botanical Garden. And I'll explain a little bit more about what it is. So it's a research tool that allows you to selectively heat up areas of the ground with plants planted in that area in order to test the potential effects of increased temperatures from climate change, but doing it outside in a less controlled environment than mm-hmm. inside in a growth chamber to be more realistic.
Okay. Okay. And how did you use a lab to create that field warmer?
Yeah. So I had to build the entire thing from scratch. So my design involved cutting plexiglass to make the outer areas of my chamber. I cut plexiglass. I bent metal. I had to build all my own custom electronics to control the heating cables that cause the thing to heat up.
Wow.
So soldering, Arduino programming, I used epoxy resin to build components. I did a ton of filament printing because I needed to make random components that I didn't even realize I would need until I was like 3 or 4 months into my project. But the fact that I could just be here and just, okay, wait, I don't have this component. It doesn't really exist, or it costs a lot of money, or it would be here in 5 weeks. Okay, I'm just going to open Infusion 360 and I'll make a component real quick and print it. I mean, it's a huge benefit.
Wow. Okay. And did you find out all these things you need to do by yourself, or did you take classes here? How did you gain this knowledge?
Yeah, so some of it I figured out myself, but a lot of it was through talking to the people who work here. So Ed and Peter, the lab manager, and also in the job shop.
What's a job shop, real quick?
The job shop. So it's basically this area out here, mm-hmm. which is outside. Really useful to say, really useless to say on a podcast, sorry.
We're in the Lily's Proto Lab, and there's a glass wall around us, and that's the job shop where there is even larger machines.
Yeah, exactly. And I think basically there's actually very, like, functionally no difference between the job shop and the Lily Lab. You can okay. almost just consider them the names designated to the different areas. But yeah, the job shop is more of a kind of a larger room where people can maybe work on sort of more, I guess, hardware objects. So what we do a lot of the time is kind of prototyping. So working with like small fiddly objects that you're planning on reiterating and stuff. Whereas I guess the job shop is a bit more on the heavy machinery size of things. So they have things, for instance, like a milling machine, which can basically, yeah, I think if I go into all of the different machines, it's not that interesting, but basically they have a lot of more heavy machinery, yeah. I guess you would okay. say.
Okay. I think the difference that I would say is that the job shop is basically a metal and wood shop primarily.
Okay.
And for doing construction rather than the Proto Lab, which is, yeah, again, for small scale fabrication.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay.
But I split my time, I would say, between the Proto Lab and the job shop when I was working on my major, because I did have larger components. I did some wood. I had to build some wood components as well. And then I also spent a lot of time soldering and programming in here.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Like if you want to use a saw, it's probably the job shop. If you want to 3D print a component, it's probably in the Proto Lab.
Yeah. So that's super nice that they're directly connected to each other.
Yeah,
and you can use both and get help from people, because that's how you gain the skills you needed for your project.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew some stuff, but I learned a tremendous amount from being here and talking to people.
So cool. Yeah. And you use it as an education source as well, right? As a teacher?
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of involved in teaching in a couple of different ways. So I'd say we have, one of the ways is very, very formally. So essentially we can offer this space to host courses. So basically, like, a lecturer can stand at the front and explain to people how they do something practical usually.
Yeah, because I saw lots of tables with soldering machines on it.
Yeah, exactly. So at the moment we're hosting a course, we're hosting a couple of courses, but one of them that we're hosting is InfoMITI, Interaction Technology, for the master's, but also for the bachelor's course. And for that, they'll literally have Lennart Harreler, the lecturer for that, is also involved in the Protolab as one of the kind of strategic members. And he'll stand there, give instruction on how to solder the components, and then the students will go and solder those components. So it's very, I guess, like this kind of traditional workshop. And then we have sort of, I guess, semi-formal education. And that could be stuff that we've done, for instance, for the Bio-Inspired Innovation Program, where we host specifically a workshop on, let's say, 3D design. And we say, okay, you can all come along. We'll have, you can all come to the Protolab. We have an assignment that we're going to do together. We're going to work on it. I'm going to provide some instruction, but you're also kind of working independently. Mm. It's very, as I said, a very much a workshop format.
Okay.
And then,
Josh, you're a bio-inspired student. Yeah. Can you tell what kind of products or prototypes originated from this type of workshopping?
Sure.
I think you missed that. Yeah. I think you were there the year before we started introducing it formally as a workshop.
Yeah, I guess I don't think I did a formal workshop.
What would you have loved to be making? just a hypothetical question.
Yeah, so was always a little bit jealous of some of the stuff that people made for the design challenge, both last year, but especially this year.
Yeah, so the design challenge is a course.
Course in the Bio-Inspired Innovation Masters, where students have to come up with a problem in the world and try to make a solution to it using ideas and principles from the natural world, very in line with Bio-Inspired Innovation as a master's. And last year there was a little bit of prototyping. A couple groups came here and made things, but it was sort of in the very early stages of the Protolab. And this year, I believe a lot more students came here and made really high-level prototypes, which is very cool to see.
Nice.
Katie? Yeah, definitely. And as I said, from this perspective of being a part of the education staff, you do see this very dramatic difference year on year. So 3 years ago, let's say, we had loads of people creating designs as part of the Bio-Inspired Design Challenge.
Like what?
For instance, lots of floating islands that can clean ponds from eutrophication. That's a very typical bio-inspired innovation perspective. But they almost all stayed on paper. Mm. So we had one group that created a very, very low fidelity prototype, also using the Job Shop. And we had another group that received funding to recreate what they wanted to do is essentially a nanoscale filter that would be able to remove particles from the air. I think it was based on the rhizomes of a plant. And that's because they received the funding to do so. So they were able to come to the lab and build their plan, build their design. But what we notice is, 3 years ago, only two groups managed to make a prototype. And of those two, it was kind of after the course had actually stopped. So the ones that were kind of worth completing. In Josh's year, so let's say 2 years ago, we saw a really big uptick. A couple of different groups tried stuff, but I think the biggest the most dramatic difference is in this year, where literally every group came with a prototype. Wow. And some of them were what I would call a visual demonstration. So we had, for instance, a group, they actually published recently their project in the Bioscope, the biology magazine. So if people want to read a bit more into it, it's very easy. In the March edition. And essentially they reproduced visually what the shark skin design of the inside of their pipe would look like, which was to reduce biofouling. So to reduce the accumulation of biofilms on the insides of pipes, which would prevent water flow. Then we had another group that produced, for instance, literally a rat chew toy that was made out of essentially layering on different amounts of very coarse material. So I think they used some sand and some stones, and then some glues, essentially, which would help basically file the rats of teeth, because they wanted to try and control rats gnawing stuff without killing rats, because in the concept of bio-inspired innovation, you obviously don't want to be killing loads of animals just to stop them nibbling on your cables. One of the other projects that came out of it was the elephant tiles. So essentially they wanted to try and produce a white clay tile with the surface of elephant skin, which would able to, it basically has this concept within it of self-shading. So it's able to, by creating tiny elements of lighter and darker, it basically helps air movement, let's say that, and helps pull more heat away from the surface of the tile. And they created a negative mold of what they wanted using a 3D printer. And even though they didn't have any experience before in 3D design or 3D printing, they're basically able to use what you see is what you get 3D design software. So that was Tinkercad in this case, to produce a negative mold of their tile and then physically, patch the clay into it, push the clay into it, and then create a tile as a result. So yeah, it was really nice.
Wow. So really usable, directly usable clay tile that's inspired by the elephant skin that absorbs.
Yeah, it's certainly enough to create a prototype of the clay tile. I doubt they would start whacking it on people's roofs, but they could definitely start to be able to test proofs of concept with it.
Really interesting. Thanks. Josh, can you tell us a little bit about your background? Because I heard from Ed that your background really helps in your major research project.
Yeah, so especially with the sort of larger scale construction, my dad is a very technical person, and I grew up building things with my dad from the time I was very young. I think I cut something with a saw when I was like 5. I was handling power tools when I was probably about 10.
Wow.
And so I have a lot of those sort of construction skills, and I spent all of my middle school and high school and even through and in college, I worked professionally in a scene shop, like to make sets for plays. And so I have a lot of background in building stuff, which I think really helps with the ability to think spatially about projects and to just be able to put things together. So I think that really made a big difference.
Nice, yeah. And how do we keep the Lily Proto Lab low threshold for people who aren't, from being a small kid, that technically raised? Is it usable for everyone in university?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically one of the ways that we try and keep it as low threshold as possible is we try and host workshops that would teach people some of the basic design skills that would enable you to use our technology. So basically computer-aided design. So we teach people how to use 3D, teach people how to do 3D design through, for instance, really simple programs like Tinkercad, but then also quite advanced programs like Fusion 360, which are ways that you can basically draw on your computer to create 3D physical shapes.
Wow.
And then we also then teach 3D printing courses to basically take someone. The idea of the course is it takes someone from, I don't know what a 3D printer is, to I can independently print simple objects by myself. And then we're also experimenting more and more with kind of soldering workshops. So obviously, depending on what your interest is, you might never need to solder in your life, or it could actually be a really practical and useful skill, especially once you start working in this space. The second you want to start making a sensor and you want to start using a microcontroller, it all of a sudden makes a lot of sense to be able to solder. So we try and keep the threshold low by basically offering a couple of the basic skills.
Right.
And I suppose the other way that we do it is our general work method is very much a kind of, let's call it almost like a sparring method. So people come here with a design, something they want to build, and we tell them how they could build it. But we also tell them a bit, you've chosen this approach, but maybe this approach makes a bit more sense.
Right.
So we kind of try and coach them a little bit around it. We're not going to design it for you.
No.
But if you come with a design, we can definitely help think of some improvements.
Oh, that's really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's an emphasis on, we will show you how to use all of the tools and we'll help you use them, but we want to teach you while we're helping you. So we're not going to be like, oh, push all the buttons for you. You know, we're going to say, here's this tool. How do you think this might work?
Right.
And then we help guide them through the process instead of doing it for them.
Yeah. And I think that's a really, really, I guess, almost like a key fundamental part of the Lily Labs design and what we're trying to achieve is we really see ourselves as an education facility. So it's a really practical space, and some of the products that people produce as a result of it are physical hardware products. But what we really love to see is someone that comes in with very little ability and leaves feeling very confident and able to produce something themselves. So in a way, our most important product, our most important thing that we produce is just people having like the increase of practical skills in the people that come here.
Yeah. And I can imagine that people are listening to this and thinking, oh, I would love to learn and to make something here, but they are struggling to go towards a design because maybe you're not in this mindset of everything is possible once you go for it. What would you say to those listeners who are just at this very early stage?
Yeah, I would definitely say just try and dip your toes in, like, because once you start, I think it's way, the threshold becomes way lower in my opinion. And then it's easier and easier to think of interesting things to do.
Right.
So I very randomly, as one of the first things I made was just a chessboard. You can actually see it behind you here.
That's
it's one of my
chessboard.
First projects, and it just used a couple of different tools to give me an idea. And then once I could do that, I could also start working with different machinery. And I've made really random stuff. Like I've made recently a sunglasses rack that you can drill into your wall and then you have a place to keep all of your sunglasses, which is obviously useful in spring, summer. So shout out to Thingiverse for finding that idea.
Right, because you can come up with your own idea, but you can also take open source ideas from the internet.
Yeah, nice. That's a really big part of 3D printing especially, is there's a huge community of people that have made stuff before. And even then remixes, so people basically adapting the idea. And it's a really kind of supportive open source community. So maybe to answer your original question, how can you get started?
Mm-hmm.
Look on Thingiverse, find something you really want to make that's practical, and come here and say, hey, I found this thing and I really want to make it. Could you show me how?
Maybe we should talk about the community evenings then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a really good one. So at the moment, it's every fourth Tuesday of the month. It's not every last Tuesday of the month, weirdly, because sometimes it's five, sometimes it's four. But every fourth Tuesday of the month, we host a community evening. That is basically when anyone can come, basically with any project that's outside of our usual remit, so outside of education and research, and we will help you build it physically or assist you in making it. And usually we have these they're not like the most stringent criteria, but we try and keep everything very focused. Is this actually useful to society? Is this useful to your research? Is this useful to education? And if it's not any of those things, then this probably isn't the best place to produce it. Maybe go and use a commercial option.
Mm-hmm.
But on community nights, the rules are out and you can finally print your Dungeons and Dragons figure.
That's really nice. Yeah, I do have a lot of 3D printed game thingies too.
Yeah.
I will definitely check this out, this community evening. Sounds really nice.
Yeah, they're really nice also. Just good community building.
And free pizza.
What? Okay, nice. Lily's Proto Lab has just been around for a couple of years now. It's very new. How did that idea originate?
That's a good question. So to answer the first bit of Lily's Proto Lab is new, we're actually about to celebrate our first birthday. So we've officially been open now for 1 year and a couple of days, and we're going to have our first birthday on the 27th of March, our big party. And in terms of its conception, it's basically the idea is that in the Netherlands, the typical setup is you have technical universities, and that's where everyone builds flying cars, as far as I understand, and have big, crazy labs. And then you have...
I went to a technical university. It's not the
case. That's
There's
what
a
it sounds
stuff,
like.
So. No.
Yeah, so we get a lot of inspiration from them. But Utrecht University has been seen for quite a long time now as, firstly, a humanities university, which wasn't a perception I was aware of. And secondly, it's really seen as kind of a place where you do lots of theoretical work.
Mm-hmm.
And what we wanted to do is say, look, you can still come to Utrecht University and build physical prototypes and build hardware and kind of try and basically make it that people in this university have a place to experiment with practical ideas. And basically they had the idea that if they produce a makerspace that was for the entirety of the science faculty, you could have people from different parts of the university working together and building physical ideas that take, maybe that each individual component can do by themselves.
So why is this called Lily Lab?
That's a very good question. And yeah, it's probably the second most asked question we have after, can I print my Dungeons & Dragons character here? And essentially, it is called the Lily Lab because we're here in the Carolina Bleeker Gebouw. And Carolina Bleeker's middle name is Emily. And so her nickname was Lily.
Okay.
And so therefore, we are the Lily Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Carolina Bleeker is a physicist from Middelburg. And she helped create the phase contrast microscope, which was, so we had the inventor of the microscope who won the Nobel Physics Prize for it. But then she was the person that actually was involved in the physical making of it, so the manufacturing.
Right.
And we have this great quote from her, which I'll quote now, which is, nothing leaves this factory without thorough examination. And that's kind of the, I guess in a way, that's the kind of prototyping philosophy we try and emulate here. So
right.
Everything here is tried and tested.
Nice. It's an honor to her to have this lab there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of, in general, I think there was a bit of a realization that women are actually quite not as well represented within the university as they could be, especially in the naming of buildings and stuff. Like, this is very typically the case when an institution is quite old. And so this was, again, I guess I get a bit of a way of kind of clawing that back slightly and trying to celebrate the women that come from here.
Nice. So you spent months here, Josh. People come in and out for courses and stuff. And those are kind of large projects. Are there small projects you can think of that people have done or come up with cool products that they prototype that are coming down in a shorter amount of time, like smaller ideas?
Yeah, people do all kinds of scales. There's someone here who's been coming in recently who's been making like sort of these glasses with a little camera on them,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. And that's sort of like a medium scale project. I think he's been working on that for about 2 months or something,
okay.
So a little bit longer. But people sometimes also just come in to like print a 3D model of something. And this is true also of faculty members,
right?
Like people from the chemistry department or from Bio-Inspired Innovation also,
mm-hmm.
you know, have come into print like skulls. I see over there, there's some skulls of some human ancestors that were 3D printed.
Skulls.
Yeah. Or there's a 3D printed tardigrade. You know, these are like little 3D prints that people come and do. And that's...
A brain, I see.
Brain, yeah.
Yeah.
Say one of the biggest uses of our 3D printers is just little single 3D prints or a couple prints that people come in and do over the course of a day or a week or something.
Yeah, wow. Definitely. We do get people making a lot of educational models for sure. It's a really easy way to show a concept is to do these kind of physical objects. Much nicer to kind of hand around these different skulls in a classroom than it is necessary to like show them on a whiteboard.
Yeah.
And then people can only see them from one dimension, or everyone has to wait until it's on that slide and then the next slide goes.
Yeah. It's way more interactive. Them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say, as Josh mentions, there's really a big variety of scale.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are still making things kind of for research, even though they're only coming for one short session. And one of the examples I was thinking of was, we had a researcher recently produce, the project is called like 90 millimeter replicator plate. And they basically produced, how to describe it? Like a big button, it kind of looks like, with a flat side, with a flat top.
Yeah.
And they put a cloth over the top. And using that, they reprint yeast colonies from one plate to the next from their agar gels. So if you can imagine, they have this, let's call it a button, mm-hmm. that has the same diameter as the plates that they use. They then squeeze a cloth around the button, and then they basically print it. So they go from one plate to the next.
Like a stamp.
Like a stamp. Oh. Exactly, like a stamp.
It's an agar stamp.
Yeah, it's an agar stamp.
Wow.
And yeah, he just produced that in, I don't know, a day. Didn't have any former experience using the Protolab, had an idea, had like a, I think he had a one made out of steel that he was using for smaller plates, and then just wanted to produce a bigger one for his bigger plates. And yeah, came with his own file and said, hey, I want to build this, is it possible? And yeah, within a day, he just easily produced this small, well, actually quite large 3D print.
Nice.
We also sometimes have people come in just for advice. I was here last week and someone, I actually don't know what department he was from, came in with a prototype that they'd been printing in their own, they have a printer in their own lab and they were printing it there, but he just wanted advice about how to get some threading right. And Zach, who's another person who works here, we sat down with him and we sketched ideas and we had this whole back and forth chat about it, and he left with like 3 pages of notebook ideas of how to improve his design, which is also something we do because it's also what we love to do.
Yeah. This really comes back to this kind of sparring dynamic of you don't necessarily even have to make something. We're very happy to kind of just comment and help you try and build it yourself.
Nice. So let's say that listeners have been inspired by this episode, let's hope, and they want to build their own prototypes or just talk to you to get some advice going. How would they go about this? What's the next step for them?
Yeah, so we have this kind of, this catchphrase of like how to begin, well, start with a brilliant idea, but that's also not necessary. So one of the most simple ways you can start is by maybe just joining a workshop. You don't even necessarily know or have to know what you want to do with it yet. And then just come to a 3D printing workshop and then leave with that ability, that kind of new skill. And then from that, you should be able to kind of start imagining different projects that you could potentially come up with it. I think it really helps if you're already involved in your major research project or your bachelor's, for instance, and you can start thinking about a practical component to that. But that aside, if you do just already have a great idea, the easiest way to get started is actually go onto our website, so Lily's Proto Lab, go onto the Get Started tab and just fill in a formula that says, hey, this is my plan, this is what I want to build. Essentially, can you help me? And then, we'll reply to you as soon as possible and get the ball rolling.
Nice. That sounds great. I really want to thank you for talking about Lily's Proto Lab today. And I hope we inspired a lot of listeners in order to use more prototyping in their research and in their education. Thank you, and see you in the next episode. Bye.
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 Welcome to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.